I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Gloria Loring joins me now. The acclaimed singer and actress is on to talk about her new book, Coincidences, God's Way of Remaining Anonymous, Reflections on Daytime Dramas and Divine Intervention. It's a memoir of her years of raising money and awareness for juvenile diabetes, her time on Days of Our Lives, playing the role of Liz Chandler, raising her two sons, Brendan Thicke and Robin Thicke, as well as her career as a singer, hitting number one with the song Friends and Lovers. In the course of the book, though, you get something beyond mere memories and anecdotes. There's something else. It's the power of coincidence that you see realized in Ms. Loring's book, with a lot of insight and personal study into the mystery, spirituality, and science of coincidence. This book is also an inspiring read. You read about how she deals with her son's chronic illness, how she survives unraveling marriages, and how she's triumphed over childhood abuse. It's a compelling book, one that's hard to put down. Gloria Loring also co-composed the theme songs for television programs, Different Strokes, Hello Larry, and The Facts of Life, which she sang. She's a spokesperson for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. The website for more is at GloriaLoring.com. This book is published by Health Communications. I am very pleased to welcome to the Planta on the Line program in Lake Arrowhead, California, Gloria Loring. Ms. Loring, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, yourself?
Very good. I love D.C. You live in a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, because when you were married to Alan Thicke in the early 80s, he had a show on CTV. Didn't they film that here?
Yep.
Yeah.
We had one show that was in Vancouver. Was René Simard in Vancouver?
I think he was.
His show was in Vancouver, right. Alan actually was the host of the show, but then he did René Simard in Toronto. He was all over the place.
Yeah.
And I spent so much wonderful time in Canada. And actually, I live in my own version of BC, because although I'm in Southern California, I'm 5,000 feet up in the mountains, and the trees have just turned. And we actually had a dusting of snow a week ago, and I love that kind of climate.
Yeah, yeah. So you grew up there in Flushing, is that right?
I grew up in a number of places. We lived in near Flushing Meadows, in Queens, actually, in Bayside, Long Island. I don't know, it's all these different names. And I lived there till I was 11, but I spent all my summers, at least a month of every summer, in northern Minnesota. And all my family was from Minnesota and North Dakota, once again, the North.
Uh-huh.
And then when I was 14, approximately, we moved to Miami Beach, which was quite a cultural shock for me, because I came from a largely WASP environment, and now I was in a school where almost everyone was either Jewish or Cuban. And I was the outcast. I was the outlier, you know.
Right.
And it was a big shock to me, and it served me well, in that I found ways to just do what I did and be who I was, and even though I was somewhat of an outcast in my first year, by the last year I was there, I was up for, I don't know what, princess of the school, and I was voted most talented, and which is just a great testament to going ahead and being who you are and do what you do to the best of your ability, and the heck with everybody else's opinion. I didn't know I was proving that to myself at the time.
Right. Now, growing up, what role did faith or religion, what did that have in your life?
Well, we went to some different churches. Along the way, I heard some things that distressed me, that didn't sit right with my heart, that everybody was going to hell who didn't follow a particular Christian understanding, much less if you were Catholic or Jewish, or, you know, then you were definitely lost. And that was sort of what I absorbed from the environment,
right. That
we're the only ones who are right. And so I sort of put all of that aside, all those rules and all the dogma, and I did some investigation on my own through the years, doing a lot of reading about other religions, and I started to see the coherences that passed between, you know, the golden rule, the kingdom of heaven dwells within you, that presence, that power, that intelligence is available to you. But it wasn't until I reached a turning point in my life and really wanted to know how to pray, and I sent a little request up, and I said, I want to know how to pray, and within a month, someone sent me a correspondence course that was in line with the my ecumenical view of, you know, the presence we call God. Anytime we call it by name, we limit it and define it, mm-hmm. you know, and it's indefinable and unknowable. But what it did, this particular course, which was about yoga philosophy, 4,000, 5,000-year-old teachings, was a way to approach the mystery not thinking about it and not making rules, but using meditation and direct access. And I liked that. Let me find out what's true for me in my own heart, and then let me live from that, not from the rules that someone else tells me. You can dance, you can't dance. You can sing, you can't sing. You can do this on Fridays, you can do this on Saturdays. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just wanted a big, expansive, arms wide open way to look at this. And then I was telling someone the story of how I had raised $1 million for diabetes research mm-hmm. For my son Brennan, my older son. And I said, isn't that an amazing coincidence? And this person said to me, yes, but you know, coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. And that immediately got my attention. I said, wait a second, tell me that again. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it down. And I began to ponder it. And eventually, when I could see this course of coincidences in my own life, and I wrote the stories down, a sort of experiment in terror, because I was not great with a blank page. It scared me to face a blank page. But I wrote my stories down, and then I realized that I needed to research the subject of coincidence. And that and my reticence about mm-hmm. putting a book out that had God in the title mm-hmm. is why it took me 12 years to finally get this book out into the world.
Yeah.
But what I'm finding now is that it has such an ecumenical viewpoint, because coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous is a quote by Albert Einstein.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I read that in your book.
I didn't know that until I was deep on my journey with the saying. And he also said, the more I study science, the more I believe in God. Hmm. And what he meant is he meant I believe in this huge, massive, beyond our knowing intelligence and creativity. And so we can, whether we've found a particular path that we would call religious, or whether we just want to appreciate and be grateful for the great mystery of our connection in the universe, coincidence offers us a way into seeing how that mystery, that connectivity, works in our own lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you go on this journey of learning from different faiths, different religions, sort of different spirituality schools, I guess.
Yeah.
That, I must say, I greatly admire, because, first of all, it takes a lot of patience to do all that. But but for you, you learned a great deal.
Yes.
And you took from each stuff that would be useful for you.
I saw those big ideas that were repeated again and again and again. The simplest and most direct being, of course, don't do to anybody else what you wouldn't want them to do to you. That reappears through all the major religions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that alone, if we truly lived by that, imagine how different this world of ours would be.
Mm-hmm.
It would revolution. Talk about a revolution. That would be it. But I found what I love now is I can go anywhere. I could put a headscarf on and go into a mosque and listen to them praying to Allah, because they're praying from their hearts to the mystery. Allah means the nothingness, the no-thingness, the beyond our knowing. We can't sequester it into a word or a concept. I love that. I love the idea of Krishna, the God of love. I love and so appreciate Jesus, this incredible being who came here and walked a path that was so powerful that 2,000 years later it's still affecting lives. The Buddha, still affecting lives over 2,000 years ago. you know, I mean, these greats, these people who brought us a spiritual ideal, and they offer slightly different ways into the mystery. And then for those who don't even want to particularly think about the word God or what, you know, I mean, it's so massive, how about just looking at the way you're connected to goodness in your own life on a daily basis? Because, as an example, Jesus said, by their works shall ye know them. So it's by how we live our lives in the world that people will know where our hearts are. And so when we look for the good, when we come to life with love and acceptance and forgiveness and lack of revenge, all of that, you know, we come with the positive viewpoints, first of all, our lives are happier. And then we spread that resonance, that viewpoint to those around us, because every single one of us is a teacher. It just depends on what are we teaching. Mm-hmm. Are we teaching patience and forgiveness and compassion and goodness, or are we teaching impatience and judgment and, you know, those sorts of things?
Yeah. For forgiveness is something that you know quite well, and something that one learns from, learns of when they read the book. You talk in the book about being abused by your father. You were 3 years old, is that correct?
Yes, yeah. Yes. That's my understanding is that it was about three. It was what they call precognitive. In other words, I didn't have language to understand what was happening, but the body memory was in there, the smell, the feel, parts of my body going numb, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So when was it that you sort of realized what had happened? I mean, that was years later, right?
Yeah, it wasn't until, let me think now. It was about 20 years ago.
Yeah. And so
that came to the fore. And it came into my life, well, you know, because you've read the book, but we don't need to go into that right now, through a series of very esoteric experiences, very mysterious coincidences that led me exactly where I needed to be. You know, sometimes someone else's path is not the path that is right for us.
And so what, how do you get beyond that? I mean, there is trauma, obviously. There is grief.
Yeah.
There is sadness. But my sense is that you're at a place now where forgiveness is, I guess, that's where you are, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, there's not a one of us that hasn't done something we regret, that we did when we weren't in our right mind or in our true body. What happened with my father, my best understanding of it because of the smell of the liquor, was that he was very, very drunk. We know that drinking blots people out from their inhibitions, from the natural walls or don't do that's that might arise. They don't know who you are. They don't see you. You know, someone who murders, in a sense, my way of thinking is, in a sense, anyone who murders another human being is for that moment insane. They are not in their sanity. They are not in their humanity. They are not in their right mind. And so, as I would like to be forgiven for those instances when I lashed out in some way or did something unconscious that may have, even though I don't know it now, that may have somehow hurt someone else, wounded someone else, I know that it is best for me to give what I would like to get. And that is, some small, what do they call it when you play golf? You get like a mulligan or rain check or whatever that is.
Yeah.
You know, I would like for somebody to say, you know what, she wasn't her true self that day when she did such and such, when she lost her temper and did such and such or screamed out or lashed out in cruelty or, I do believe that we meet in spirit, and so when I meet my father on the other side, I know that everything will dissolve in that moment, and we will see each other in our true hearts, and it'll be okay then. So why not make it okay now, somehow?
Yeah.
Not okay that he did that,
right?
But okay that I can say, he wasn't his true self. And there's not a one of us that hasn't had some instance when we are not our true selves. And by true, I mean our best, highest, most magnanimous, most generous, most compassionate selves.
Now, in the book, you highlight a number of coincidences in your life that that are happy. I mean, your son Brennan meeting his wife years later.
Yes.
After meeting. I mean, that's a great story. I guess they'd met as kids on the set of Days of Our Lives, and then
isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yes, that Brennan and Dolly were both in one of the Christmas party scenes, and they would let people on the show bring their kids in to act as the extras.
Yeah.
In the children's Christmas party. And Brennan and Dolly were, her dad was the technical director in the booth. And they met.
Yeah.
And 20 years later, they met again, quite by accident,
yeah,
quite by coincidence.
Yeah.
When she was looking at the alumni list for Chapman University, looking for a friend of hers named Ryan Kavanaugh, and happened to see Brennan's name and said, "Oh, I remember him. Oh, he was so cute. Oh, I'm just going to send him an email and say hi and remind him that we met on Days of Our Lives." The next thing they knew, they were having lunch, and then they were having dinner, and
yeah,
2 years later, they were married.
Yeah. It's a great story. And then the other story that I liked is when you met your husband, Renee, on the plane.
Yes, that's in Chapter 12.
Yeah.
Yes. Here, you know, he's Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
He's very meticulous about everything, except his office. About everything else, he's very meticulous, although he says, "I know where everything is."
Right, yeah.
But he always, when he traveled, he's a great traveler, he always wrote his departure times on the outside of the ticket folder.
Yeah.
And this one time he had written the arrival time, the only plane he ever missed in his entire life, and he wound up sitting next to me. And just like Brennan and Dolly, he and I had met almost 24 years before when he was the art director on the Glenn Campbell Show, and I was the guest artist that week.
Huh. Yeah.
And we started talking, and a little voice in my head said, "Well, this is a face you can look at for the rest of your life."
There you go.
And I went, "Excuse me?
Yeah.
Hello? Who was that?"
Yeah.
And then, you know, there are more stories that,
right,
that come from there. I mean, my wedding ring. We looked for 6 weeks for a wedding ring, and nothing touched my heart. There wasn't one that I looked at that I said, "Oh, that's it," until we went to a little jewelry store in Glendale, California. They put the ring on my finger. I got a shot of, like, chill bumps up my arm, and my heart kind of did a little dance, and I almost got tears in my eyes, and I said to Renee, "This is the ring." And the jeweler said, "Oh, I just brought that back from a trip to Basel. My husband is from Basel, Switzerland."
Yeah.
I found the ring in Glendale, California, the only one that spoke to my heart. And the ring was from Basel, Switzerland. And we have a home filled with Basel stuff. We have maps and medallions and masks because he's what they call a Basler Bebby, which is a Basel maniac. Basel, it's kind of like, you know, New Yorkers and the Yankees.
Yeah.
That's how Basel people are about their hometown.
And so I guess these are coincidences that you don't plan, you obviously don't plan for, and you don't even expect some instances, right?
No!
Yeah. But in reading the book, one gets a sense that I don't know, can you have this sort of good luck come to you? I mean, can you sort of program yourself to have it come to you one day?
Well, I would say, out of my own experience, that the more you look for the good and the more you expect the good,
yeah,
the more likely you are to find it. And that can start with being grateful every time it appears. A friend of mine was going through, I tell this story in the book, a difficult time with her business, and she said, we need new clients, and this and that, and I think I had told her to make a list of the kind of clients she wanted, and within that week, they got two new clients.
Hmm.
And when I talked to her, she said, "You're not going to believe this. I got two clients that exactly matched what I put on my list and the kind of clients I wanted." And I said, "Did you remember to say thank you?" And she said, I did it. She said, I opened my office door and shouted out the window, thank you!
Yeah.
When we dwell in the world of possibility and probability, I think we do affect it. We know that in the study of epigenetics, as an example, that in our body, genes are turned on or turned off by the thoughts we think and the emotions we have. Well, if The Secret, as we know that book and that movie, if any of that is true at all, and certainly perennial philosophy down through the millennium, tell us that, yes, we attract what we look for. So from my own experience, I would say yes, and from a whole lot of observation from very wise people, I would say yes also.
Yeah. In the course of all this introspection, the study that you did, in the course of writing this book as well, do you get a sense? Because, I mean, there'll be people listening to us who are wondering about life, wondering about God, and have these existential questions. Do you have a sense of what life is all about now?
I have my own perspective. May not agree with anybody else's. I do think that there is every probability that we have more than one chance to get this life right. The opportunity to come back into another body is mentioned in the Bible. It was believed in early Christianity, but was then expunged from all the doctrine because the church at that time wanted people to think that they had to be completely dependent on the church for salvation. So I believe we get, you know, just that's a background. I believe that we get more than just this one lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven knows I'm going to need one, more than one lifetime. But I believe that we come into this life with issues and opportunities that we can possibly learn from, grow. Even the hardest things give us an opportunity to maybe let go of something we've been holding as true for a long time that may be an unfortunate belief or about ourselves. I believe we come into this life to learn how to practice compassion and patience and forgiveness. Some of us have a really hard time in this lifetime. Maybe they get another opportunity to come back and try again. I would never tell anybody they have to believe it, but mm-hmm. my own experiences, my actual physical experiences, have been such that I do believe that. And I think every day is an opportunity. I read quite a few books, Joe, about near-death experience,
right.
Because I've been fascinated by that. And so many of the people who have supposedly traipsed over to the other side and then come back to tell us about it,
yeah.
have said that what they came back knowing was that the most important thing is love, and the next important thing is learning. That when we cross over after this life, whatever we have learned that has been beneficial, we will take with us. And maybe that explains savants who come in.
Yeah.
That they amassed all this learning and they brought it in, you know, geniuses or whatever. But that love is the most important thing. That success is not the most important thing. Accruing lots of goods, you know, most of us know that that's not really the most important thing.
No.
It's fun, but
yeah.
it's not the most important thing. But that love itself, and I had a chance to experience that this year. My sister passed in April, on April 18th, actually, and I had her in my home for the last 6 weeks because she said she needed to come here. She needed the quiet, and she needed my help, and we worked on improving the quality of her days. We didn't know it was her last 6 weeks, but it wasn't looking good. And that time, that opportunity for me to show up every minute, any minute of every day, and bring the best of myself. I mean, there was one time when she called me. It was 10 o'clock at night. She called me from the guest bedroom, and, Gloria, I need you. Come. And I said, no, I'm so tired. I'm so tired. And Gloria, I had to stop myself and say, Gloria, this could be her last night. Come on. You know, because I wanted to complain. Oh, I'm so tired, you know. Mm-hmm. But I got that opportunity to show up with the best of myself. And so it was a great lesson. Because we never know.
Mm-hmm.
We never know. And even in her last couple of days, there were coincidences that were just extraordinary that came in for my sister at the end. So I see that this goodness is all around us, our connection to what we need to know and what we need to grow is in our lives. And maybe our job is just to become more aware of how much goodness there truly is.
And you're getting the goodness back. I mean, you got grandkids now, and both of your sons are doing well, right?
Yes, they're both doing well. And we've got Nana's rascal boy, that's Tyler. He's 4 and a half, and he's Brennan's son. And then Julian is Robin's son. He's 2 and a half, and he's just the cutest. They call him Juju Bean, and he's just the cutest little bunny with blonde curls. He's so cute. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And I have friends, and I have a beautiful home in the mountains, and I have a good, steady, good-hearted husband. And, you know, I worked hard to get here. And whatever more I have of it, I'm grateful for.
Yeah. The response to the book's been pretty good, though, right?
Yes. I'm getting such beautiful feedback from people. I'm really gratified to know that my intention was to uplift and inspire people about their own lives and their own possibilities. And that's what I'm hearing back from people.
Yeah. It is a very compelling read. So I just wanted to ask a question about Days of Our Lives. You left the show in 1987. I guess you were shot a couple of times, but you never died, I guess, right?
No, she never died.
Yeah.
So people say, why did you leave? And I say, because they shot me every 2 years, whether I needed it or not.
Yeah. Now, why didn't you ever come back?
You know what? I don't know. They just went on, and Liz, after Nia left, didn't have any familial ties to anybody on the show. You'd have to ask the producers.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning, I didn't care to. I was tired of it. I was tired of some of the bizarre storylines we had to play. Although I loved most of it. I would say I loved 80-85% of it. And then as a year, I mean, you know, people have talked about my coming back, and I actually met with the producer a year and a half ago, and we had a terrific meeting, and I gave him some ideas for storyline, but they haven't decided to do that yet, and, you know, well, whatever, it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good.
And so, I guess, your career now, I mean, you're known as a singer, right?
Well, I always was a singer.
Yeah.
I was a singer from the time I was 14. I was out there working in coffee houses, and then I was working on the road with my music when I was 18 all by myself, and it wasn't until 15 years after I started my career that I joined Days of Our Lives, and I studied acting during that time, and then I was on Days, and so my singing informed my acting, and my experience as an actress informed my singing, so they fed each other. And that's a really good thing. It's been very beneficial.
Yeah, I've seen clips of you on YouTube performing, and there isn't a singer that has as much stage presence or that, you know, that has that charisma on stage than you do.
I mean, thank you. You know, it's interesting. Just a few years ago, my son Robin Thicke,
mm-hmm.
and people know him as the R&B superstar person.
Right.
They called him a superstar in duets.
Mm-hmm.
He's a superstar in my heart. He mentioned to me, he said, you know, but Mom, and I said, well, you know, you got, your dad was a singer and songwriter, and I'm a singer. He said, no, Mom. He said, but it's because of you that I decided to become a performer. And I said, really? He said, yes. And he had come with me on one of my Australian concert tours. I did four.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there every night watching me go on stage. And he said, it was when I saw you on stage and the way people reacted to the singing and to you and how you made them laugh and touched their hearts, and it was then that I said, oh, that's what I want to do.
Hmm.
So that's very gratifying that my joy on stage would fuel my son finding his joy in his life.
And his career is just, I mean, it's tremendous now, isn't it?
He's done very well. He's actually got a new series that'll be coming out, I think, after the first of the year on BET as an actor. He's trying his hand at writing some things. He's just enormously creative and very forward-thinking. He's very much like his dad. He's an initiator of projects, and he's very, very well-respected in the music industry also.
Yeah. It's been fun talking to you today. I've, as I said earlier, this is a compelling and fascinating book. I've enjoyed reading it, and congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it. I suspect that it'll help a lot of people.
Well, thank you, and just let people know that if they want to take a quick look, they can go to my website, GloriaLoring.com, and there's a little button there with the cover of the book, and it says click here, and that'll take you to a page where there's a little video of me, and then it takes you right to ordering pages on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Books A Million. So they can find out where to get the book, and there are songs. That every chapter has its own song, and all of those songs are contained on a CD called Turn the Page that is also available on my website and on iTunes, and you know, lots of good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm having fun with it.
Indeed. The website for more, GloriaLoring.com. The book is called Coincidence is God's Way of Remaining Anonymous, Reflections on Daytime Dramas and Divine Intervention. Health Communications is its publisher. Its author, Gloria Loring, on the line from Lake Arrowhead, California. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.